This is Akashvani. In the program Money Talk, now we bring you a discussion on payment of tax devolution by the central government to the states. The participants are Vishal Dahiya, economic analyst, and Lalima Aneja Dang, anchor.
Taxes on income are levied and collected by the union government but shared with the states on an equitable basis, and the basis of distribution is determined by the parliament through a law. Well, for more on this, we are now joined by Mr. Vishal Dahiya. Welcome, Mr. Dahiya, to Akashvani Studios.
Thank you, Lalimaji.
Vishalji, what exactly does devolution of tax mean? Because we know that we have a federal structure. How would you explain that for a common man?
This is really important because devolution of taxes is effectively the division of the tax money which has been earned by the central government, and that money is to be divided between the center and the states as per a particular formula. There are set criteria too as well. Interestingly, Article 270 of the Constitution provides for this scheme of, you know, division of taxes, the money which is collected through taxes between the center and the state. This money is collected generally by the central government, that is the union government, but then it is divided between the center and the state as per different formula. Now, what does it include? It includes, the corporation tax, the personal income tax, and now that the GST is here, central GST as well, the center's share of the IGST, that is CGST there. So this is basically based on the recommendations of the Finance Commission. Finance Commission is constituted, again, as per Article 280 of the Constitution, and it is constituted, it is brought into force every 5 years, the recommendations are made by the Finance Commission, which are then implementable for the next 5 years. For example, now from 21 to 26, the recommendations of the 15th Finance Commission are being implemented. The recommendation of the 15th Finance Commission, in a plain, simple sentence, if you want to understand it, is that 41% of this divisible pool of taxes should go to the states. And Mr. Arvind Pankaria has been now made the chairman of the 16th Finance Commission, which will then devise a formula and give a particular number and the ways to go ahead with in terms of dealing with this divisible pool of taxes from 2026 to 2031 for those 5 years as well.
When we talk of devolution of taxes, what is the criteria for this? What are the factors considered for the center to give to the states? Is it population? Is it per capita income of the state or the fiscal status? How would you define the criteria?
See, I'll tell you, you know, this might seem like very complex, but then...
Yeah, it sounds complex, yeah, because we are particularly a very, very complex country also.
Let's try and simplify it for our listeners. Mm-hmm. And it works like exactly like school exam or a college exam as well. There are subjects. Then in those subjects, there are marks which are allotted for a particular, you know, kind of work which is done by the students. Now, in this particular case, there are certain heads. Those heads get an earmarked percentage. The total comes out to 100. But this is done differently based on every Finance Commission's recommendation. I'll go back to the present Finance Commission's recommendation, which are in force right now till 2026. First is income distance. Now, income distance gets 45, you know, percentage points out of 100 as per this the 15th Finance Commission's report. Now, what is income distance? Income distance is the difference between a state's per capita income and the per capita income of the highest state, the state which has the highest per capita income. So right now it is Haryana. Haryana has the highest per capita income. So any particular state, the difference between that, the income distance, that's the distance. Mm-hmm. Any state which has the lowest per capita income will of course have a highest income distance. They will get more marks to it. Okay. And that is why, and this is to ensure, you know, parity between the states. Right. So that those which are already rich or wherein, you know, the per capita income is already high, it's not inequality.
Yes.
They should not end up getting, lion's share of the pie here.
Yes.
So to maintain that equality, that's how it happens. Mm-hmm. Next is population. Now, there are two criteria. Population, till the 14th Finance Commission, the criteria was 1971 census. But from 15th Finance Commission onwards, this is 2011 census. There are 15 percentage points which are allocated for this particular point. That is, what is the state's population? Based on their population, there's a formula, they get marks out of those 15%. The other is area. How much do they go for the area? Again, 15% goes for the area. 14th Finance Commission had, certain points earmarked for forest cover as well. But 15th Finance Commission has removed that. There are no marks for forest cover. But forest and ecology. Mm-hmm. Instead of forest cover, it comes to forest and ecology. In 14 Finance Commission, states which had more forest cover tend to gain more because the marks allotted were 7.5. But the 15 Finance Commission has done away with forest cover and instead said forest and ecology. It's not just about forest. It's also about the related ecology as to how the balance has been maintained by that particular state in terms of development, whether it has been a sustainable development or not. And the marks here are 10. Then the next is demographic performance. How are the states performing in terms of their demography, in terms of the percentage of the young people, the percentage of working class, the percentage of different factors in the demography? Mm-hmm. And that's 12.5. And last is tax effort. That is 2.5. Tax effort is the efforts made by that particular state to collect more taxes, or in terms of whether or not that taxes, that state government has been able to go ahead and collect all kind of taxes there. So this comes out to be 100. Based on this 100 percentage point, a call is taken, numbers are earmarked, and that becomes the basis for devolution of the taxes from the divisible pool to all the states in the country.
So are we going by this logic? Are we able to do justice to all the states? Or theoretically, all this sounds good, but when you start implementing, there are other issues which crop up. There are certain inequalities or aberrations which come up. Have we been able to iron out these some discrepancies which come up with this? Or do we still have room to improve this?
Let's look at our constitution. And our constitutional scheme has always favored strong center in terms of legislation, in terms of administration, in terms of financial relations as well. But that does not mean that the spirit of federalism is not there.
Yes.
The Constitution has a very strong spirit of cooperative federalism, something which the present government in its previous two terms have been talking about as well. And this is simply because, you know, either of the states should not feel shortchanged. It's not just about money. It's not just about finances in terms of administration, in terms of legislation as well. The Constitution has been framed in such a way. But then in democracy, just like any other issue, there are differing points, differing views on this issue as well. Some of the states have raised points in the past as well, saying that there are certain aspects which can be relooked and then perhaps which can then be, you know, tweaked slightly to ensure that states get a little bit more money for them to spend, and also in relation to the kind of money which they contribute towards, you know, the overall tax income as well, the tax revenue. Now, one important aspect here is that the central government, the divisive pool which we talk about, the central government also charges, also levies cess and surcharge to a certain amount. For example, there is a cess on GST on some services. There is a surcharge as well. Now, this cess and surcharge is not part of the divisible pool of taxes. Because the central government says that, you know, mostly this cess and surcharge is levied by us to go ahead and, you know, deal with the debt of the state governments, because state governments also get loan from the center. In terms of money which the state governments get, it's not just from the divisible pool. It's not just about devolution of tax revenue and that's it. It's not like that. In addition to that, they get aids and grants as well. Financial packages by some states, they are demanded. Of course, if the state demands 100 rupees, it's not necessary they'll get 100 rupees, but they do get some sort of assistance. Then if a calamity strikes, it's a natural calamity, then there's a central assistance as well. So there are different ways in which the central government goes on and, you know, keeps on helping state governments in terms of their financial matters. Another important aspect is that if required by the state, the center also loans money to the state. That particular loan has to be paid back. Sometimes it is not paid on the time. Sometimes, you know, the interest on the loan is not paid. So the central government says that for us to deal effectively with the finances of the nation and the financial health of the state governments as well, we use the cess and surcharge money. Some state governments' viewpoint from some state governments or some of the other policy experts is that perhaps, you know, the states might feel a bit more confident or happy about their finances if the cess and surcharge is also included in the divisible pool of taxes. Again, this is one argument which comes in. Then there are one or two more arguments which come in, and a very important argument here is that how much money does state government get for every rupee they contribute to the central taxes? And if we look at a figure from 2021-22, then interestingly, the least amount of money which any state has got in comparison to the money it has contributed towards central taxes is Maharashtra. That's around 0.08%. The maximum amount of money which any state government has got in relation to the money which it has contributed to the central taxes is Bihar. So some states which have well-developed industrial economy or which contribute more towards the central taxes, they have this argument that if we are contributing more, then we should also have the equivalent amount of share in the tax revenue as well. But then again, that is decided as the criteria which I was describing earlier, decided based on that criteria which is finalized by a finance commission for those particular 5 years. Another, suggestion which usually comes in some of the policy experts or economists or some of the state governments or their finance ministers as well sometimes, and this has come in lately based on the GST Council formula. Since the GST has been implemented, there is a GST Council. All decisions related to the GST Council, GST, are taken by the GST Council. It has representatives from all states as well. So some states say that why not have the similar kind of mechanism for the devolution of taxes as well. But then again, the Finance Commission has had an impeccable record so far. It has made very important recommendations. Those criteria have always been agreed to by everyone. It's expected that with Dr. Pangaria at the helm of affairs for the 16th Finance Commission, in a year or so, we will have that report coming in for 5 years from 2026 to 2031. And therein, we will have a little bit more clarity on what has changed in terms of criteria. As I was explaining earlier, the criteria has changed significantly from the 14th Finance Commission to the 15th Finance Commission as well, because a lot changes in the country's economy. And in the past 10 years or so, Indian economy has been on a stride. It has been moving fast. The GDP numbers speak for themselves. The fundamentals are strong. The markets have responded equivalently. There is a lot of push to the infrastructure through capital expenditure. If you look at last 4-5 years central budget, there's a lot of focus on the capex as well. So these all contribute a lot towards what actually happens on a macroeconomic basis, then which becomes the basis for the Finance Commission to come to a conclusion in terms of numbers of the money which has been collected through tax revenue over the last 4-5 years, the way it has been devolved to the states, and then the way it should be done for the next 5 years.
We changed the norms for the poverty line, we means Niti Aayog. If required, is the commission open to any kind of changes in the criteria for this? Or are they just because, as you just said, India is now the fastest economy of the world and it is also changing very fast. The dynamics of the country are changing very fast. We are having a global footprint and it's really on a rise. So in case required, is the commission open to any more suggestions?
Well, I would say, Lalimji, with a renowned economist like Dr. Pangaria at the helm of affairs at the 16th Finance Commission, I'm sure, he and his team would be open to all kind of suggestions. But as far as, the criteria for the poverty line is concerned, that is an issue which does not only involve Finance Commission or the economic experts as well. It's a huge policy issue, something which also needs to be dealt with at a policy level by the government of the day also. Then there are different parameters, then there are different yardsticks as well, which are involved here, because that will have a lot of impact upon how those numbers will eventually deal with several other central and the state government schemes also. Because the data with poverty or the poverty line data is the base data which is utilized by the governments of the day, both at the center and at the state level, to come to a conclusion in terms of how to implement various policies in the social sector.
Precisely, before we wind up, how is this money used by the state?
Well, exactly in the same way as we use in our house, You and me, if we get a salary or emolument, the way we use it, it's basically, that it's used by the state government for servicing its policies in that particular state, dealing with various developmental issues, infrastructure things as well, then dealing with, servicing various machinery as well. And of course, the salary also, law and order is a state affair, so they have to have a robust infrastructure for the law and order as well. So health, education, the state has a lot of stake there.
Yeah.
So the state government has to account for that money also. And then various state governments do also tend to have their own versions of different social security policy as to depending upon the needs of their constituents or the promises which are made by them when they were coming to power.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Vishalji.
Thank you, Lalimaji. Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on payment of tax devolution by the central government to the states. The participants were Vishal Dahiya, economic analyst, and Lalima Aneja Dang, anchor. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani.